Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Good evening to everyone on this Saturday, September 15, 2018, and welcome to Booker T. Washington Speaks. We are actually joined through the internet here at our African American Family Room Forum, which we're seated around, like right now it's like, it's not night here, so I would say we're seated around the not a fireplace, but we just seated around a nice fountain of fresh juice that is pouring out. So we're going to get a cup full before we start our discussions and so forth. But let me say, I am Halim, the Dream Builder, and I'm Dr. Halim Mustafa, a social engineer psychologist for a long time, a student of learning modalities. And I'm supporting the host and moderator of the show, who is the senior great-grandson of Dr. Booker T. Washington, and quite simply, we say the professor, and he's all that in a bag of chips, let me just say it that way. So tonight's topic is going to be on the topic that last year in a northern state, which has an aggressive educational improvement program, African-American high school graduation rates trailed white graduation rates by 20% and Asian American graduation rates by 30%. The question is, what can be done to close these gaps in the future? But before we bring the professor, I'd like to open with prayer. And please join me if you will. I'll say it in Arabic and English as a part of the tradition here. A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Ar-Rahmanir Rahim. Maliki Yawmiddin. Iyaka na'budu wa iyaka nasta'in. Ihdina siratal mustaqim. Siratal ladhina an'amta 'alayhim. Ghayril maghdubi 'alayhim. Amen. The translation from the Arabic in English is, I or we seek refuge with God away from the accursed devil Satan. With the name of Allah God, Master of the Day of Judgment, Most Gracious, Most Merciful, Master of the Day of Judgment, Thee alone do we worship, and Thine aid do we seek. Show us a straight way, the way of those who Thou hast bestowed Thy grace, those whose portion is not wrath, and who go not astray. Amen. Let it be so. Again, I'm going to say the topic, and then I'm going to let the professor know it's time for his show to get this show going here. So last year, in a northern state, which has an aggressive educational improvement program, African-American high school graduation rates trailed white graduation rates by 20% and Asian-American graduation rates by 30%. What can be done to close these gaps in the future? So, Professor, the show is on your hands, sir. Professor?
Thank you. Yes, thank you very much, Dr. Halim Mustafa, co-host and moderator, co-moderator. How are you doing this evening?
Wonderfully well. I'm here in San Francisco, City by City Hall, so it's kind of a wild and crazy environment, you know, here in San Francisco. So everything is fine, sir.
Good, good. I'd like to be able to be out there with you. As I've told you many times, I have wonderful memories of the Bay Area, especially the other side of the Bay over in Berkeley, where I attended school for several years, and so I'm happy that you're out there in sunny California, as it's known. Has it been sunny out there today?
Yes, it is. Right now the sun is glaring right in my face, and it feels so warm. It's light, you know, it's just warming me up. Even though the clouds are rolling in, like, you know, like fog overcast, like, but the sun is beaming really bright today, right now, on me.
Yes, well, good for you. I'm happy that you're out there where it's sunny. Over here on this part of the East Coast, I'm in Augusta, Georgia, but from here all the way up to Virginia, we're having some rough weather, not as bad here in Augusta as it is further up into South Carolina, and especially the coast of North Carolina near Wilmington, where it's been catastrophic flooding. Many people lost their homes. Some people lost their lives. Many people have lost all of their lives, accumulations, just in the last 24 hours. And the reason why I'm mentioning that is because our topic tonight talks about increasing our graduation rates for our young people. You know, if our young people are not being successful in achieving the disciplines, the character values, and the disciplines to persist through what is called the foundational educational experience for adulthood, which is, you know, usually considered high school, then they won't have the ability to participate in the recovery of our lost excellence. You know, these cities that have been devastated in the last 50 years have mostly recovered very well. There are areas that have not recovered, but the cities have taken great pains to do whatever was necessary to recover their lost excellence. And some have done it in relatively rapid time frames. You can go to New Orleans now, and there are parts of the Ninth Ward that still look like they've been hit by Katrina, but then there are other parts where it's almost like a new city has been built because people have taken advantage of the opportunity to go in there and for what I would consider to be very, very favorable prices, have bought up some of that real estate that was devastated. They've torn down the structures and they've begun to build new edifices to start New Orleans life all over again. And this has happened in most of the cities. Problem is that it's in the real hard hit black communities where if gentrification hasn't come in to rebuild those communities, you still see the evidence of the destruction. And so consequently, we see that there's something sociologically defective in our African-American communities, and it actually has an effect on our children's completion of their education through high school and also through college. But we're dealing tonight with high school graduation rates. And I noticed that we've had several guests join us in the last few minutes, and so I'm not going to do a monologue right now. There's some more that I want to say, but first of all, I want to welcome panelists that is a mainstay on this program. Mr. Bianchi, how are you doing this evening?
Well, I'm doing fine. We're out of hurricane's way.
I guess people out on the East Coast are having an adventurous time, but we're doing pretty well.
Well, that's an interesting choice of words, and the reason why I say that is because I'm in Augusta, Georgia. We're right on the outer band of the hurricane, and so we have gotten some winds today. And one of the things that I chose to do, I have several automobiles, but one of my automobiles needed to have a tarp wrapped around it. And so I did that yesterday, but this morning I went out and we begun to get some winds, and I realized that I had to secure the rope that I put around the top. And so I had the adventure, and that's where the adventure word comes in, of remembering some of my Boy Scout knots. And I thought about the adventures that I had as a young fellow, about 11, 12 years old, learning those knots. And just reminiscing and thinking about the senior Boy Scout that taught me the knots, it brought back some good memories. So even though here, because I'm not in a dangerous situation like the people up further on the coast are, I did have a little adventure out there in the wind. But yes, for some of us, it's an adventure, and it's a pleasant adventure here because we're not in danger. But, of course, we know further up the coast, it's a tragedy and a catastrophe. We were just talking about that just as you were dialing in, Mr. Bianchi, and I just want to just finish what I was saying is that African Americans for the last, oh, I guess maybe 70 years at least, certainly since the 60s, have suffered catastrophic failures in general in producing the kind of successes that other ethnic groups have produced regularly in terms of getting our youth to complete the fundamental citizen building, adult developing educational phase, which is high school. And so our topic tonight, you know, as we looked around at some of the statistics, we found that in one of the northern states, and it happens to be Minnesota, and I picked Minnesota because of the fact that it's not a state that's known for having a lot of African Americans, but then there are places like Minneapolis and St. Paul that do have large African American populations and several others. But I went to high school in Minnesota. I went to a private prep school. And so I got the impression that Minnesota, even though it's a private school, was high on educational progress. And I found out that just in the last couple of years, they have made a concerted effort, and I use the word aggressive effort, to even improve their educational program. You know, we had the slogan, No Child Left Behind, and then we had other slogans, and their slogan basically deals with success. They're focusing on trying to do everything they can from the educator standpoint to assist the students in achieving success. But even there, and here's my point, that the African-American high schoolers are lagging behind the other ethnicities. The African-American students are lagging behind the white and Caucasian students, 20% in terms of graduation rates, and 30% behind the Asians, Asian-Americans, in terms of graduation rates. And even though a lot of interest has been put into developing opportunities for African-Americans, including what you mentioned often, school choice, still, in general, our young people don't seem to be getting the traction that's needed to be able to progress and move up. And so what we're going to talk about tonight is what can be done to close these gaps in the future. And so I'm going to go ahead and since Dr. Mustafa was here in the beginning, he actually is a co-host and opened up the program, I want to give you about 2 minutes, Dr. Pierre, if you can just give us, you know, a concise synopsis of what your opinion is, and then I want to turn it over to Mr. Bianchi so we can hear from him. So, Dr. Mustafa, would you go ahead?
In a summary, I want to say, I have it here. In a summary, I want to say that our young people are not given a true perspective of what it means to be without the education. I think there needs to be like some trips into poverty-stricken areas as field trips for those young people to let them see what this is, the good and this is the bad. You either do something that's going to help yourself, or you're going to end up on skid row. I mean, those realities are real. And the idea is that we need to also address what is the kind of things in the homes that we can kind of bring to bear in terms of how to make the home environment serene enough where these young people can be there and go through a learning in terms of studies and those kind of things, and having the family be participating as opposed to hating on these young people for their brilliance and so forth. So I'll just stop there for now.
Okay, well, that was quick and to the point. We'll get back to you for more, but we'll turn over to Mr. Bianchi. What would you like to offer us in terms of an answer to the question, what can be done to close these gaps in the future, sir?
Well, you talking about the future now. This, if you want to do something for the future, like I said before, I've been saying quite some time, you need to separate these kids amongst African Americans or amongst blacks. You need to have a method of, like they used to track back in the 70s and so forth, how they used to track students into certain schools, whether they was trade schools, whether they was a liberal arts, or whether they just plain traditional settings. And you need to start directing them into certain areas. I think it's foolish to let a child decide what it is that they want to be. especially when you already, as a group, that's, if you're talking about doing things as a group and you see the deficiencies in the areas where you don't have even your representation as a part of the entire population of the country. And you have to have schools, so like your boarding schools, where you keep your child 24/7 and have them acclimated into the necessary prerequisites, whereas they can maintain their own. Parents should have a choice to take their child out. They should have money to follow them and put them in a environment that's going to be conducive to their long-term educational goals. The present group, I don't think you can do anything with them. I really don't. I've monitored them, watched them. I was watching some today. I was in a setting that was designed to produce kids in STEM fields. And I was in one workshop, which lasts about 45 minutes. The attention span is about 25 minutes. And out of the 10 that was in that workshop, I, from their response for their ability to give input on the topic matter, the way they was able to interact, I say it was about 3 out of that 10 that showed that they came from a functional family. The others, maybe 4, the others was playing on computers, bobbing their heads back and forth, and having a conversation with another member there in the setting. So that's what I see. So if you get 30%, and on the high side, maybe 40, you're doing pretty well. But as far as having 100%, that's going to take a lot of work.
Well, thank you. I just want to respond to something that you said. I'm not disagreeing. I'm just looking at it from a different personal perspective about the children choosing what they want to do. I agree to the extent that they need guidance. They need direction. In fact, I remember when my mother was a graduate student working on her second master's degree. She got her first master's degree in education, the general education, but she went back to school several years later to get a counseling master's degree. And so I was in college as a freshman at Tuskegee. I just finished 3 years active duty in the Army and had returned to college, went to school at Tuskegee. And so she decided that she was going to use me. She was going to test her counseling skills on me by administering this aptitude interest. It's actually an interest test to be able to turn it in as her assignment, but also to find out what I was really interested in. Now, by this time, I'm 20 years old, and so I had developed some strong interests that had begun when I was about 6 or 7 years old. And not to go into the full story, but the fact is that I learned when I was about maybe even 5 years old that I had an interest in radio communications because my father had worked with radio. He was a radio officer in the Army Air Force. He was also qualified as a pilot. But he was responsible for maintaining the radios for the people in his squadron. And so he had developed this interest in radio communications as a result. And so after the war, he bought a shortwave radio. And I used to spend hours and hours and hours listening to broadcasts from all over the world on the shortwave radio. And it really fascinated me to hear the different languages that I was able to pick up, Spanish, Chinese, etc. And so later, I was able to buy a crystal radio set and I never did get that thing where I was picking up everything. I guess I didn't understand the importance of having the right kind of antenna. But just the idea of getting on the inside of a radio to find out what parts made it work propelled me so that when I went to the military prep school, which was a boarding school, such as the kind of thing that you're mentioning, we all had to take a trade in addition to the academic and military training. And so I chose radio communications. Actually, it was electronics and electricity. But I had a specific interest in learning more about radio communications. And the teacher actually was a German who had a ham radio station. So he could talk to his family and friends over in Germany. And he allowed us to work with him as he actually repaired parts or put new parts on the radio. And so that stimulated me so that when I finally went back into the military, I went into the Navy the next time around, I chose to become a radio technician. And I'm just saying that many times the children, with the encouragement of the parents and sometimes without the parents even realizing it, do develop a very strong interest in something that can propel them throughout their life in a particular professional field. But I do agree that the parents should take the lead in helping to provide the atmosphere and the environment. And my parents did encourage me, you know, in the things that I wanted to pursue. They took an interest when they saw that I had an aptitude for certain things to encourage me. And I think that's the most important thing. I don't think that the parents necessarily to dictate to the child what the child because that might not be where the child's natural aptitudes or interests may be, but they definitely should give the child a set of choices and explain the advantages and disadvantages of these different choices. So I didn't want to get into a monologue. I just wanted to say
well,
that.
You know, if you look by the way, I had a strong background in electronics also. I'm a ham radio operator. I hold an extra class, KT0J. I have the third class radio telephone license and also a first class radio telephone license. I built all my ham radio equipment, the transceiver that covered 10 meters all the way up to 80. Built the amplifier, 1,000-watt amplifier with 2 3Z500 tubes. You know, later on, I would build a robot for my to interact with my daughter that had the ability to. It was about 3 foot tall. It had ultrasound detectors and also infrared detectors. We would wake her up in the morning. We would work with her on her homework, help her count, and all that stuff. And when it felt that its batteries was going down, it would seek out its charging station and back up into it and charge itself. And then I built a computerized van. Took a 78 Dodge Maxi, stripped it down, redone all the electronics in it. I had voice-operated doors. I would say open sesame, and my doors would open. So I did all those things too, but yet instead, I went on into commercial construction. But if you look at this country of India, and India had teams that went around the country, sort of, and it would seek to test students. So like I mentioned earlier about the tracking, and then it would create these IT schools, these Indian Information Technology schools, and thus you have what it's due today. That's why, you know, you look at the predominance of medical doctors that works in the United States, foreigners, they're from India. And that's because they developed those type of schools in order to produce that. I have always said, in talking to an engineer today, and he related to the fact that STEM to African Americans should be not only science, technology, engineering, math, but also medicine. I know of a family, the Nash family in St. Louis. Not only the mothers and fathers are doctors, But I think the three children, I think they have at least three children. They are medical doctors also. Five members in the family is a doctor. So if you're lacking in areas, and if you see these high-paying fields, these high-paying professions, and especially where this country is having to call upon immigrants and give them work visas to fill those positions, then that's what Americans should be training their children in those directions. I mean, it's not nothing to play with. Those that are able to draw that type of income, that type of salary, they're going to do a whole lot better off than those that's taking, you know, certain other things. And you know, there's articles, too, that says that African Americans, blacks, are overrepresented in low-paying majors. So for those who don't want to do it, no one's making them do it. But there are people who are doing it, and it's probably suiting their outcome.
Well, thank you. I want to go ahead and turn it over to Dr. Mustafa. Would you come on and give us, or you had just taken a minute to give us a brief presentation, but now we've got more time. Would you like to expand on what you were saying before?
Yes, most definitely I would. I want to say that, again, the environment is very important, and we need to look at, in the urban communities that have these dysfunctional environments, to have something that's going to be like a life center, a training center, where that is not just for fun, as a lot of people want to divert fun in place of learning, but we want to, we need to set up something that's going to be, like you're saying, the aptitude testing through methods that today we know would work. The wind is blowing. Can you hear me okay without the wind behind me? Because if it is, I'm going to change locations. How's the transmission?
Well, not too bad right now. I did hear some wind a minute ago, and I was going to just wait and see if it was going to continue. But right now, we're okay. But I'll definitely let you know if it gets to be where it's difficult.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Please. Yeah, we're only going to do an hour tonight, okay. And so we're at halfway point. So we'll see how things work out over the next 5 minutes.
Okay, now what I want to say is nutrition. I would start with nutrition, right? And then, you know, get the nutrition values in these young people. And I would also reintroduce or reduce home stress, reduce the home stress in some ways of going and assessing how we can support the family in certain needs, right? And then I would look at encouraging the high achievement, because a lot of times I'm talking in a certain grassroots of where majority of the blacks are, there's not an encouragement to be high achievers. And then I would then ask parents or set up systems within those homes as well as in the community or the agency that we set up for that purpose, enforce a study schedule so that the young people, either at home or wherever they're going to have their studies, is consistent. Because without consistency, they don't get the response memory behaviors, right? And then I would reduce TV brainwashing, because that is certainly something that takes a lot of their time, and we can include in there the social media brainwashing that takes a lot of their time. And then, of course, you need role models like Mr. Pianki, like yourself, Professor, that maybe can't come physically, but we should use the technology for this for the transmission through the TV that come through when they do the satellite location where you're at and beaming into that location. That needs to be something to kind of get the young people's interest and keep on the consistency. Don't worry that there's not a lot responding, because the children a lot of times act like they don't hear you, but they're receiving the information. And I would say this as a first point, though, too. I believe that there has to be a God conscious in the young people at some point, right? And so that they can see that they have a life purpose. And a lot of people don't really believe in God, I understand, but how about the karma of life? Is what you do or what you don't do, the end results will become a reality in your life. And so a combination of those things with sincere people who really want to help, we'll have some changes, and that's what I'm going to say for now, sir.
Okay, well, thank you. We want to welcome Sister Gail Muhammad, who just joined us, and for her benefit, maybe she heard through the internet, but for her benefit, Dr. Mustafa, could you reiterate the topic for tonight?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Here's the topic. The topic is last year in a northern state, and we said we identified as Minnesota, I believe, which has an aggressive educational improvement program, African-American high school graduation rates trailed white graduation rates by 20% and Asian-American graduation rates by 30%. And the question and the responsibility is, what can be done to close these gaps in the future?
Thank you. Sister Gail, welcome to the African American Family Room Forum. Booker T. Washington speaks, and we hope that you did hear the topic that Dr. Mustafa just read. And if you did, what's your response to that?
Well, I think on a more positive note, I think the gap is closing. And a lot of times the reporting of statistics I have some difficulty with. But I think any time you do have an aggressive Educational Improvement Act, you get positive results. And that could start as back as early as elementary school. A lot of times from my experience that the way science, technology, engineering and math, how they're taught early is very important, and it's key to the success of any student. A lot of times in especially in schools with a large population of African Americans, they're not taught hands-on science. I remember in the school district where I work, which was basically predominantly African Caucasian, but they restructured the whole school on a different model, and they received a big grant for a science lab, and then our science became hands-on science. We would take the children up to, when it was our science class time, we would take them up to the science lab. They would put on lab coats and everything, and depending on the subject area that they were being taught at that particular time, we would call them botanists, and, you know, and I think that makes a difference. And I think there's not a lot of money put in certain schools. Even in this school district, there are three elementary schools where it was predominantly African-American, just in language alone. The school that I was in got a science lab. The school that's predominantly African-American got a science closet. That tells a lot about the intention and the expectation of the students. So, you know, some of those differences, when those differences in the structure of the curriculum and everything are closed and are given, you're going to get positive results wherever any child is, and especially African-American children, because a lot of them benefit more by hands-on learning. And there's nothing wrong with that, because I think what we've seen in education is that I think everybody, not only education, even in job training and everything, people do better when they have hands-on training. And that's, I think, what you and Mr. Bianchi were talking about. That's hands-on things. Children, I mean, the human being, I think, learns better. And that's not to say that they can't learn, you know, without hands-on. But at any time, as many senses that you bring to a learning environment, that increases the retention of the information and the skills. So I think, you know, all these things, and especially STEM now, because now STEM has blown up, everybody want STEM, and that, yes, we should want that for our children too, because that's where it is. And I think the education system switched, because I know, and I'm sure, like Mr. Bianchi was saying, that we had a shop, home economics, and arts, and different things like that, and it was in the curriculum when we came to school. For 20, 30, 40 years, most of the schools went on a model of everybody going to college, and I think that's where we're having so much trouble, because our children aren't even introduced to those hands-on type of things. I even know I learned a lot from going to shop. I can use a saw. I can take an iron apart. I can splice a cord and change it when it gets done. But, you know, the children, if they don't have a model like that in their home, or there's not after-school activities. I also have 4-H, where I learned how to crochet, and I learned how to read an electric meter and different things like that that I learned growing up, you know, and it makes a difference. So now I think in the last, I don't know how many years, our society is saying, hey, that model's not working, because everybody does not want to learn all the things that they have to learn in a college setting. They'd rather be in a technical school where a lot of those other things that children feel don't apply to them is cut out. And it's, based on more on the skills of being an engineer or being an electrician or being a contractor, whatever those skills are required. That's more the focus, and the math and all that's required in those professions. And because I think what we need to look back, if we look back when our society felt that girls were not given the same opportunities as males, that it was a progressive educational improvement program that was instituted into schools, and that then girls started excel in areas, math and science, and now like technology, you know, where they didn't excel at before because they didn't have the experience. But once, you know, and it was forced. And I think if we really want to change these statistics among African Americans, then things have to be forced on the educational system for it to change. And that's how we're going to close the gap. And I don't think we will ever have 100% of anybody, Caucasian students, Asian students, none of them 100%. What happens is when they come to America, it's usually the top ones in a country that come here, and they're used to excelling. And of course, the Asians excel the average Caucasian in our society. And they have set a standard, and with some positive, if you talk to some of them, positive and negative of them, that, you know, everybody expects all of them to be smart, all of them to be highly motivated and everything like that. And it's, you know, you always have, I think, a span of achievement, but certainly the achievement will improve when we do have an aggressive educational plan for African Americans. And it doesn't have to be, you know, there's some things that, you know, as far as with any culture, if, you know, these Asian students and all, they come with a culture intact. And a lot of times our children get turned off in education because they don't see any representation of the successes and things that they need to see. And field trips and stuff are important, you know, just if they're used properly. Too many times it's not always for education. It's not an extension of the learning environment. It's a fun day. And so therefore, but if some of the more progressive schools that have predominantly African-American children in, they're taking field trips into areas where African Americans are successful in engineering and owning their own businesses and letting them see success rather than constantly hear about their failures. And that's helping a lot of them succeed. So a problem that's going to go away overnight, but we should definitely be thinking on the grounds of a aggressive Educational Improvement Act, and definitely STEM, because even now in our area, they have added, it's called STEAM, and they have added art in there too because of a lot of the creativity that comes out of, you know, a person through their expression in the mediums of art. So, you know, I think that's, we just have to, you know, take it down and be able to take science and all those things and make them developmentally. Too many times in our educational system, you know, they teach science where it's in elementary school. That goes against the developmental nature of the child. If they would give more hands-on in the elementary years, and as they grow up, then the science labs and their experiments and everything will increase their knowledge. But a lot of times it's taught so abstractly, and it's all textbook, and they get very they don't have enough lessons on applying it in the early age when it would benefit the student most. And then they begin to turn off, and they hate it. So by the time they get to high school, they're totally turned off. And then they don't benefit by the lab, so they need more hands-on everything. We taught hands-on math where, you know, they would see it wasn't all abstract. You would learn a concept and then be given scenarios or manipulatives to bring that math alive in their environment. And I think if we do all those things, that we'll constantly see improvement in African-American children, as we have already. You know, we as a people, we have gone through a lot, and we have become great achievers in any field that we attempt to go into. But there's too many fields that we have learned in the hidden figures of Katherine Johnson, who just turned 100 years old. How motivating would that have been to females, African-American females, and then children in general, if we had known about her. These things are, there's so much that is kept hidden from us. But I think with the internet and everything, that our children are seeing more positive. If you don't have them in the area where you are, but you know that, you know, there's African-American doctors and lawyers and engineers and you know, we're learning things faster now about, and I think all those things will help motivate our children. And I think we just need to, you know, everybody, the home environment, of course, the parents, we have to realize that's the most important. If we give children a good start and a good environment, we send a disciplined child to school, our children will progress as any other children will.
Thank you. That was great. Would one of you, Dr. Pianchi, Ms. Pianchi, or Dr. Mustafa, like to respond to what Sister Gail Muhammad just gave us? Okay.
Yes, I want to say, sister, amen to your sister. Okay, go ahead, Ms. Bianchi.
These conditions are real, real dire. And I don't know about other immigrants. I was going to tell the lady that in Nigeria, the best don't come here. And actually, the best stay there in the country as far as doctors and engineers are concerned. So I've been told by them. But, you know, you take, like, for instance, in Baltimore, it's one newspaper article. It was titled 13 Baltimore City High Schools, Zero Students Proficient in Math. And it going on to say that out of the 38 3,804 students who took this, only 14 were proficient in math. This is last year, less than a year ago. And I don't know how people even put up with that, but they do. And, you know, really, your public school, of course, your private schools, alternative schools, so if you're going to a school that's teaching auto mechanics or mechanical engineering, that's what they're going to do. But, for instance, in your public schools, it's up to parents and the stakeholders in that school district to dictate the direction that those learning should go. Not teachers, not administrators, not superintendents. It's up to the parents to dictate. And there are examples of that. A school district on the outside of outskirts of St. Louis. It's in a white district, Francis Howe. Dr. Washington, they had some improprieties as it had to do with the financing. Well, the people came up and got rid of the whole board, elected another one, got rid of the superintendent. That's something that's unheard of in inner city schools. So apparently those people have more concern and they're more functional as it applies to the direction that their children should be going. And that's what an example that it would take. Now, in this Baltimore instance, there's nothing you can do with that. I mean, if the chips are going to fall where they fall. Those kids already have spent 12 years in school. And 12 years in school, as it pertains to math, you're only producing 14 out of 3,804 that took the test. You know, another thing, too. You're talking about blue-collar jobs. The United States need to modernize its seaports because they aren't to the level where they can accept the latest in technology and ships that berth at no seaport. United States need to start producing its own maritime apparatuses, cranes, and so on and so on, in order to put Americans back to work like they once were, even in ship production. I see where the state of Virginia or a port in Virginia ordered ship-to-shore cranes from Singapore. I think that's totally ridiculous. One thing I like about this present administration, when they say they're trying to make America great again, especially in those areas, that should be something that should be just totally forbidden. I don't know about you. Look at the jobs that's involved in making cranes. Look at the jobs that's involved with making the apparatus that is needed in order to run a seaport. And when you are buying large items like that from other countries, I think that's totally ridiculous because we know that every child, we're talking about black child, all of them is not going to go to college. Those are jobs, those blue-collar jobs that they could be having. And then, too, they face another dilemma because the technology that exists today where you can run a seaport similar to the one there in Los Angeles with hardly no people at all. Those carriers run around, and they're basically robots. They're computer control, GPS control. So any way you look at it, the future is going to be very, very tough. And those who are not prepared for it is going to have a very, very difficult time. Even in policing, the hollers of police brutality is soon going to end. Because you're going to have robot cops that's going to be patrolling. And they'll be programmed to react under certain conditions in certain ways. And how they react will probably be determined by a group of people, input from all sectors of where this patrolling is going to go on. And they would agree upon that, yes, this robot should react in this way under these circumstances. So it eliminates the ability to holler racism or unfairness. So the future, as it behold, those who prepare for it today, is going to do very well. And as I said before, if you look at the participation that blacks have in occupations, as reported by the National Science Foundation, in all occupations, they only represent 6.8% of all occupations. Science and engineering, only 4.8%. The only area where they represent, we're talking about blacks, their numbers in the population, which is, 13%, is in two areas. One is social workers, where they make up 19.6% of that workforce in the entire country. And also personnel training and labor relations specialists, where they make up 13.9%. But when you look at the other field, like engineering, 4.3%. Physical and related scientists, 3.9%. Life scientists, 2.5%. Even in economics, the number of economists that carry a PhD, the population that we're talking about, only represent less than a half of 1%. Now, what did that mean? When time comes to sit at the table to make decisions, like Mustafa said, that you're not going to have people there to even represent your cause sitting at the table in all the areas where these discussions are going to be going on. So no person sitting there to represent your cause, then there's no input, no solutions going to come out of the meetings and out of the plans. So I'll stop right there, Mr. Washington.
Okay, we're almost at the end of our time. We decided just to do an hour show tonight, but I wanted to mention two things and then turn it back over to our other panelists. And the one thing I want to mention is something that I think you had referred to, Mr. Bianchi. That's actually learning by doing. I remember reading in Booker T. Washington's autobiography, Up From Slavery, where he had been doing a tour of the classrooms, but he was actually walking around on the outside of the classroom building, and he was able, because the windows were up to here, and to observe what was going on in the classroom. And he noticed in one classroom the teacher was teaching botany, teaching the science of plants and flowers, and she had used some colored chalk and had drawn a very artistic, beautiful picture of a flower or a plant. And Booker T. Washington looked down near his feet, and he noticed that the exact plant was growing right outside of the window. And so he uprooted a bunch of those plants, and he went in the building and knocked on the door, and she said, "Please come in, Mr. Washington." And he said, "Why don't you show them this? You know, this is the real plant that you're drawing a picture of." And he chose to put that in the book, I'm sure, to emphasize the need to deal with the real world when we're teaching the young people, not just the abstractions, which are important at another level. And I'll say that and segue into the other and final statement that I want to make, and that's about Katherine Johnson. I saw the movie about her several months ago, and I was really fascinated by the whole story. And then as Sister Gail mentioned her, I went up on the internet to get some more particular information about her history. And I found out that her mother was a teacher, her father was a farmer, and she was so smart, and obviously she was encouraged by her parents, but she was so smart that she started high school when she was 10 years old. graduated from West Virginia State College with degrees in math and also French studies at the age of 18. And the reason why I was so taken by her is because she reminds me of my mother. God rest her, she's not living now, but my mother was a very precocious child as well and received a lot of encouragement from her mother, who was a teacher. And so she actually didn't progress as fast, but she graduated from Tuskegee Institute when she was 19, and at 19 began a teaching career as a certified school teacher. But the fact that we do have stars, you know, such as Katherine Johnson, and I count my mother among the stars, at least in my domain, indicates that we have the potential. The problem is that everybody needs that kind of support that Katherine Johnson most likely received from her mom and her dad and others in her community, that I received from my mother and others in my community, and everybody, unfortunately, does not have that. So I think part of the solution is that we as a community of people have to develop an emphasis to make sure that every home is provided with the resources. And I don't just mean educational supplies, but I mean motivation and encouragement to promote the idea within the family that the parents must encourage their children to excel, must take an active interest in the children's performance in school. And I would go so far as I close my comments about at the end of the hour, even though we can go, but I had said tonight we're just going to do an hour. But the people in the church community, I think also, and I've seen it, I've gone to church programs on numerous occasions where they honor the young people. So I'm not saying this is not happening, but I think it needs to happen more of an outreach area, because usually the people that generally benefit from the services, I don't mean religious church services, I mean the educational services that the church provides, are people that are members of the church. But you know, you have a lot of lost members. You have people, you have young people, you have young mothers, 17, 18 years old, whose mothers are and still probably are active, were and probably still active in the church, but the doctors have strayed, or the young men that maybe went to church until they were 14 or 15 have strayed. I think there needs to be an active effort to, and just a great people back to church. They don't want to out of vision, but bring them back into the fold. I had to mute you out, Dr. Stuff, because I think there's some wind where you are, but when it's time, I'll turn you back on where you can talk in just a second. But I think bring them back into the fold of the support system, so that they know that the community cares about them and the community cares about what they're doing for their children, to help give their children the same type of boost that Katherine Johnson, I'm sure, received and my mom received. So that's all I wanted to say. We do have another colleague just came on. This is my sister-in-law, Stephanie Reynolds, and I want to welcome you, Stephanie. How are you doing tonight? I thought that was Stephanie, but I'm sorry, it's not Stephanie. Is this Sister Rashida I'm seeing?
Yeah. Yes. I was just listening, yeah. And I couldn't hear it on the computer, so yeah. I had to call in. But I've been listening. Got a cold,
yes,
so
okay.
I'm just
okay. Well, welcome,
enjoying
welcome.
It. I yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, I had said we weren't going to go more than an hour, but I never like to hold anyone back from saying, you know, what they want to say. So what we're going to do is we're going to go around again and, again, welcome everybody to make any comments that you want to make, and this is probably going to wrap up the evening. So we'll start back with Dr. Halim Mustafa. He's our co-host. And just a minute, seems like we lost him. He's out in San Francisco, and he may come back on because he is our moderator, co-host and moderator. But I see he's gone for right now. he was in an area where there was a lot of noise, and I muted it out. And he said he was going to find another spot, so maybe he'll come back on. But let's go on back to, I guess we can start back at the top. Ms. Bianca, would you like to make some closing comments, and we'll go back after you to Sister Gail. And if you'd like to say something, Sister Rashida, certainly we welcome that too. So would you like to go ahead, Ms. Bianca?
Well, Mr. Washington, I still contend, as I've further stated, that there needs to be a separation of what you have today. Those that want to separate out of that, they should be able to do so. Those who want to stay or try to make whatever they are finding themselves in, make it work in a fashion that's suitable for them, they should be able to do that too. I think there should be a method of isolating students in particular professions, particular goals, directions, and start off with them very early. And as we made mention of the Indian model, where they basically took students, where they basically took young people through a tracking method in order to derive at what it was that they wanted them to have. And you talk about the access. There's all sorts of technology out there that can be utilized in the home. Flight simulators where a young person, adult, anyone can learn how to fly at home, how to do portions of the examination that they're going to have to take in order to become that pilot. There's a need for drone pilots to get what's necessary for that. Your FAA, Section 107, you can learn that at home. And in other areas, too, there's all sort of educational models, resources that's available for parents who want to have their child prepared to go in a certain direction. I think that's very important. And there's a thing, there's also a model that's called flipped classrooms, where your homework is done in the classroom and basically your lecturing is done at home. And that's going to require some discipline, because when you take that information and you view that lecture at your convenience at home, and when you go back to the classroom, it's where you interact with other students in order to do what would normally be your homework in the classroom. I think that's a good model, but it's going to take a lot of discipline, whereas when you're at home, you're actually doing what it is that you need to be doing in order to make your participation successful. So that's all I have to say.
Well, certainly. Thank you. That was very good. I'm glad that you introduced that last part, and we'll have to talk about that in more detail at another time on another broadcast, because as an educational entrepreneur and innovator, that's one of the things that I'm very concerned about, is what is becoming the e-learning model, to where a lot of the things that used to be done in the classroom, including the lectures, are done outside of the classroom, and the classroom time is used for a group work and collaborative learning and learning by doing. So I really appreciate you bringing that up. So we want to go ahead and ask Sister Gail Muhammad, would you like to make some closing comments before we finish for tonight?
I just want to thank everybody for their positive comments and the solutions to change the statistics. And I think if we continue to share those things, because we all come out of different educational environments, different geographical environments, and we can benefit by those things. And, I just think that we just have to remain positive and celebrate the achievements of our students that are achieving and have hope for the ones that are being challenged, that aren't being challenged in the classroom for various reasons. So we should just stay hopeful, stay focused, and stay positive most of all, and look at them positively. You know, as we all grow to see that everything works when we, you know, when we become more involved and we're willing to be advocates for our students, advocates for our better education in this environment that's not always the most conducive for our students. But I think just for us to stay positive and, you know, we've come a long way and we have to appreciate those achievements, and we've come a long way, you know, with being we don't have to always talk about oppression, but oppression is not always a bad thing, because we know diamonds are formed out of a compressed state. So that's what I hope to leave everybody with, and thank you for the opportunity to share our educational and our outlooks on life. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much. I'm going to ask Sister Rashida in just a second if you'd like to contribute something. I know most of the time we've talked and you said you'd like to just listen, but I want to give you the opportunity to comment. But before I do want to broadcast this number. This is my text message number, my cell phone number. But the number, if you can take a second to find something to write with, the number is, and I'll repeat it two or three times if you have to look for something to write with, but the number is 706-399-5006. Again, 706-399-5006. So if you, during the course of the upcoming week, think of any topic that you would like for our panel, our forum, to discuss, just send me a text message. And we certainly welcome your contribution of ideas to topics. So please just keep that in mind. The number in the 706-399-5006. I see that Dr. Mustafa has returned. But before I ask you to come in and give us closing statements, Dr. Mustafa, Ali Mustafa, I want to ask Sister Rashida, would you like to contribute anything before we turn it over to Dr. Mustafa?
No, I'm going to listen to it, you know, the whole show, to get what I, you know, the beginning of it, because I only heard a little bit the ending. That was good, though. Everything was really good. So thank you.
Okay, fine. Thank you so much for being here on the call-in part of the show. I know you have been listening via the Internet, but thank you for calling in. So we're about to wrap up. So, Dr. Mustafa, I'm going to ask you to give us some closing comments about the topic, and you introduced the topic, so I don't need to reiterate it, but if you could just give us some closing thoughts based on the topic itself and anything that you may have heard this evening that you would like to respond to, would you go ahead?
Yes, I want to say we have to get our young people to understand they have to compete for seats in this world. But also we got to realize that we have to build worlds within this world. In our world, we have to build it in the things that we know that we need for ourselves and our community. We keep following everybody else and the trend that they're setting. We can learn and we can grasp and utilize, but don't let that be the basis of determining who you are. You know, we have to like get in the spirit of doing for self. We have lost that. We're following everybody else. And then see, we have to make it culturally connected to the truth of African influence in the world, right? These young people don't see that. All they're hearing is the ideas of what is coming from those who are other than themselves. And so it's time that we start looking for building a nation within a nation. And I'm going to say that the best example, two examples, is first of all, your great-grandfather is an example in the times when we were sorry, sorry so-called people. He gave us the encouragement to stand up and be competitive. And then there came the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, who I just became familiar with. I didn't really know, but I'm listening to YouTube, and I'm finding out this man was courageous and saying things about independence and influenced the black movement across this country. We have added value, but right now we're not doing anything to make it become a living legacy of what these pioneers have done. We have to include Dr. George Washington Carver, who was the first African-American to ever get a federal holiday, not Dr. King. And why? Because he helped America through economics when it was going through a dysfunction from overgrowth of cotton and the industries that were growing in other parts of the world, that America with slavery system had kind of died off, but still it was making people who were running the slave realize they were losing money. So right now it's time for us to become our own masters of our own universe, and that's my last comments.
What happened? Did we get cut off?
Pardon me. I'm sorry. That was my fault. But thank you, everyone, for joining us tonight. We certainly appreciate all of you who have called in to participate on the live telephone conversation, as well as those who called or who dialed up on the Internet. So thank you, and we welcome you to join us again on next Saturday at 7 p.m., God willing. And my number again is 706-399-5006. So if you have any ideas for a topic, please just go ahead and send us the text, and we will welcome any ideas that you send us. So at this time, we're going to close, as we usually do, with the song known as the Black National. Yes, go ahead.
Oh, excuse
go
me
ahead.
Right quick.
Yes.
Well, maybe I'll text you and ask you that. That's okay. I don't have to prolong it. That's what I'll do. I'll text you.
We actually have the time if you want to ask me now.
Well, I just wanted to know if you ever thought about if there was a guest or something that could be invited to speak about something to share with you, would that be okay? If it was in their schedule and your schedule?
Not on this show. I'm going to give some thought to having another show during the weekend where we will invite guests to give speeches. But this show basically is designed just so that our black family can talk to each other rather than have somebody take a half an hour or 45 minutes just to deliver a monologue. Here we just want to be able to just share ideas. If somebody wants to come on, and I have invited guests. In fact, I've invited Dr. Brandy Brown on several occasions. So if you want to invite somebody to come on, just let them know the format is that everybody has an opportunity to chime in rather than somebody being the star and speaking for a long, long time. That's all I was saying.
Oh, okay. It's not going to be where they're speaking for a long, long time. But like you said, the subject matter, maybe it would fit into what they're doing, and it wouldn't take away from what you're doing either.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, because you know it's kind of interesting you mentioned that, because I just had a conversation yesterday with one of our listeners who really had a problem with people making long speeches. And I understand, her concern, because she wanted to talk and she wasn't able to get in when she wanted to. But yes, if you have someone in mind, give them the number and just have them call in. You might want to send me a text so I'll be aware in advance that they're going to be calling in. Okay. Well, thank you. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Okay, we're going to close out now with the song, Lift Every Voice and Sing.